Evening, everyone. This is Adam from Uprafoot 24, another podcast on our Ukrainian review. It's our fourth one now, and thanks to Stell Shoot the Defence for giving us our platform to get the Ukrainian football message out in English language. I'm really happy to have Andrew Todos from Zorya Londansk with us again. Good evening, Andrew.
Hi, everyone.
And I've got the King of North Kiev, Andrei Viktorov. Great to have you back again, Andrei.
Hello again, guys. Pleasure to be here.
And sadly, Vladimir couldn't be with us tonight, but he's here in spirit, as always. But we're really happy we've got two great guests with us today. We've got Shiv from London. Shiv, it's great to have you here.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
And we've got Max, a fellow Sumiite in the south of Sumy region. Max, welcome tonight as well.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here.
Okay. We got lots to get through, as always. We're going to skip a few things because in about a week and a half's time, we've got a special Premier League preview scheduled to come out. But European football's been back with us in the last week. Shakhtar have been doing Ukraine proud, and hopefully they go even further. Andrew, can you bring us up to speed with what's been going on?
Sure. Yeah, so last week, Shakhtar played against Wolfsburg in the second leg of their round of 16 tie in the Europa League. They were 2-1 up after the first leg, so there was already a bit of a head start going into Kyiv. Empty ground, as is the case for all of the, the Europa League at the moment and football around Europe. Early, sort of a cagey start for Shakhtar. First 20 minutes, they were sort of trying to get back into it, get back into the swing of things after not playing sort of competitive football for a couple weeks or so. However, once they got started, it was really more or less full steam ahead from them. The same sort of stuff that we see from them in the UPL, where they were sort of dominating teams, running through just on, on the whim chances, where their counter-attacking is just so quick and the passing so silky. It was just a shame that Marias, he was having a bit of an off day in terms of his luck, just wasn't hitting the goal, had a few half chances throughout the game. And then it took until the very end of the match, after both sides has a man sent off within a few minutes of each other, that the game sort of carried on till then. And then I think because of Wolfsburg's lack of first team football for over a month and a half, I think they were literally down and out, and they were already playing a sort of a second string side with a load of injuries in their team. So they just capitulated, and Shakhtar, Marais got his goal. Solomon came on, impressed. He got his goal, and then Marias got another. So 3-0 on the day, 5-1 on aggregate, and they're through to play Basel tomorrow.
Yeah. Shiv, I know you've seen Shakhtar live a couple of times this season. Did you think of their performances? Did you expect them to get so far in the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a season ticket holder there. So, I do. I'm always flying between London and Kharkiv. So I try and catch the games when I can. I was really disappointed when they were knocked out of the Champions League. I really thought that this was the season where they could have, got in. But in a strange way, I think them being in the Europa League, they've actually got a chance of getting to the final. I really do. I think Basel is going to be a tricky game. And then they'll probably have Inter Milan in the semis. I kind of fear a bit for Marais. I think he's coming towards the end now. And I think that's the one position in the Shakhtar team where they sort of, need to have a good backup, a young backup player for him, because a lot of their good players now are the wingers like Solomon and, Tyson and Tete and players like that. So, So I think the one thing I think Shakhtar's got a chance, these are going to be one-off games now. It's not going to be a two-legged quarterfinal or a two-legged semi-final. So Shakhtar just need to, sort of for 90 minutes, just need to have a bit of luck and play like they normally do. And they've got a real chance I think, of getting to the final, where they'll probably be facing Man United, I think. Yeah.
Well, that'd be great. It's kind of split loyalties then. And Andre, yeah. you're always happy to tell us how much you enjoyed the struggles of Dynamo Kiev. As an Oblon supporter, how do you sit with Shakhtar's success in Europe this year?
Yeah, I'm really happy whether any Ukrainian team proceeds as far as possible in European tournaments. In case of Shakhtar last game, Dodo and Solomon obviously made a huge difference. But a loss of Hochelava probably might make an impact in Basel game because they have to put Matvienko in the center. And they don't have much players to cover up the left flank of defense. If you talk about Basel game in quarterfinal, then I love the way everyone talks as if it's done deal, as if Shakhtar is playing Inter, not Basel, in the half, in the semifinals and not quarterfinals. Because historically, if you look at it, it started 15 years ago with Dynamo in Champions League against Thun in qualifying rounds. It wasn't even group stage. They lost. Then it was Dnipro to Belenzona. Have you ever heard of that team? Then it was Shakhtar against Basel. They won. But however, let's not forget Young Boys struggle against Shakhtar and Dynamo, which both of our big clubs lost not so long ago. So there's a huge problem with underestimating those Swiss clubs. And this can be a problem. And that could be a full alert for Shakhtar in this case.
Max, you've been around, you've been to a lot more football in Ukraine than anyone else in this room tonight. How do you feel when you travel around? What's the general feeling towards Shakhtar? Do you think, you know, Sumi and that, the people really behind them, you want to see them do well in Europe?
In Sumi region, people don't care much about football in general. They just have their local teams. Some support Dynamo, some support Shakhtar. I see people wearing both colors around these small cities, towns. So there is not much of support of any of those teams. I would say that Sumy region is not quite a football region in Ukraine. Comparing to Kharkiv, Dnipro region, Kyiv, of course, Western Ukraine, Lviv. In Sumy region, people don't care much about football, unfortunately.
Can I just butt in there? Sorry.
Yes.
When I'm at the games in Shakhtar, when I'm there's a guy from Sumy who comes, and he's got that. He's got this big pole thing. It extends up, and he's got the Ukrainian flag, and he's from a village in Sumy. I can't remember the name, but he's one of the most famous Shakhtar supporters. He's always there in a lot of the games. And he waves that big flag. He's got like an extender pole. He's really famous, yeah. So yeah, there's definitely one guy from Sumy who's a big Shakhtar fan. So, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. We had a question come through. I need to check who it's from. It's from Roman Slava Ukraina on the Twitter. He asked, you think like we've, the sort of comparative disadvantage Shakhtar's at in the Premier League at the moment with the ease that they win the Premier League the last couple of years. Do you think it helps them or hinders them in Europe? You know, do they get to relax and rest and make sure they're at 100% in the European games, or lack of competition stops the team from developing? Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, of course. Of course it impacts them in the reality of things, because obviously they're playing week in, week out against slightly weaker opposition. You see the likes of Dynamo, who are just nowhere near the quality of European teams. And in that sense, you could say it has an impact on their sort of, especially when they're playing in the Champions League. Maybe Europa League, the teams are slightly weaker, especially in the group stages, the early sort of knockout rounds. It might be a bit easier, but I think when it comes to the sort of the business end, if you say, this is where potentially the lack of that top quality and the sort of playing against good quality players could come as a hindrance. However, I think still without that, they've still got a great squad. And I mean, it's heaps and bounds better than anyone else in the Ukrainian Premier League. So, and it's level with some of those top Europa League teams still left in. Maybe if they've got a lower budget slightly, and it's sort of more of a development squad in the sense that, you know, they sell players at, you know, 25, 26 to bigger teams. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think once with the UPL, which is going to be expanding over the next couple of seasons, hopefully that can help build a sort of a more stronger league and more stability, which will help Shakhtar and other teams as well with their development in Europe too.
I'm just trying to remember then. When was the last time Shakhtar made the knockout rounds in the Champions League? I can't remember if they made them last year or if it was the year before.
I think it might have been the year before that, but it was against Roma, I'm pretty sure. And I think they got knocked out, but I can't remember the year.
I think it just highlights with the way Dinamo's dropped off, that lack of competition, pushing them through to the highest standards. I think back to, was it about 4 or 5 years ago when Dinamo even got through to the knockout stages, and we had Manchester City here, if I recall, in the second round. Great nights, and hopefully we'll be back there in the future. Right then, we had a really interesting question come through from Petra. I apologise if I pronounced your name wrong there. But you wanted to talk more about the Brazilian players, and kind of, does anyone know how we get them across? I know Vladimir, I was hoping, was a bit of help with this. But what's the story there? When did it all start, Shiv? Do you remember?
It's been for a while, but I know that they have a lot of Brazilian agents involved with the hierarchy of the club. And they, you know, they always get offered Brazilian players, things like that. And sometimes other nationalities like Argentinians and Nigerians and things like that. But mainly they are Brazilians. And with all the coaching staff being Portuguese and things like that, or, you know, Brazilian, it's just like a perfect fit, really. And as you know, Brazil has got a massive population, over 200 million. So there's like a surplus of really good players from that part of the world. So it's sort of like a good fit between the two clubs. But I will give you a little anecdote. Like, you know, some of my family in Kharkiv, they said that they talked about when Willian was there and Fernandinho was there, and when they first saw the snow, it's like they'd never seen snow before. And they literally like put on about 20 layers in training because it was like so cold. So a lot of these Brazilians have to sort of acclimatize to the weather. Even though maybe you could say with global warming, it's getting a little bit warmer, but it's still, compared to Brazil, it's freezing cold out in eastern Ukraine. Yeah,
it's a shock to the system, definitely. And I know, having spoken to Vladimir offline in the past, I do know that there are these days a lot of Ukraine. You know, there are Ukrainian scouts out in Brazil, across South America, identifying talent, because it's not only Shakhtar, that's their team full of Brazilians these days. FC Lviv springs to mind as well. And I believe, Andre, if I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, you've even got Brazilians there in the north of Kiev.
We have one, yeah.
Yeah,
we have one.
As well, good to you.
So, yeah, that's right. He's from Donetsk originally, so he's basically Russian speaking, and he's local.
Well then, but he's still got a Brazilian passport, and
true.
They're coming in everywhere. I was at Rook, who we'll come on to in a minute, at the start of this season, and we've still got three Brazilians in their squad down in the Persia Liga. So it's definitely, Ukraine does seem. It's hard to say what started it, what brought the first, you know, the first wave across. But I think now Ukraine's definitely seen as a market, following on to the success of William and Fernandinho and Luis Adriano, just to name a few. And it'll be a debate we'll have another day of who is the greatest Brazilian to have played for Shakhtar, because I think we could talk about this for hours and debate it. I mean, Andrew, there's a challenge for you to put it out on Twitter. Who is the greatest Brazilian to have played for Shakhtar over the last 15 years? Let's see what the people say there.
Sure. Well, for me personally, it would be Douglas Costa. I think he's, for me, that's my personal favourite for Shakhtar.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, by all means, put it on Twitter. See what the people say.
So, yeah. Anyone got a favourite you want to put out there now? I think for me, it's probably William.
I would say Jadson, who scored a winning goal in the Cup Final, UEFA Cup Final.
Fair enough. Right then. Anyway, one more question from Peter. Taking perhaps a step to the left here, he asked, you know, when do we see realistically the chance of Shakhtar returning back to the Donetsk region? And it's a more political question, I know. But he did ask it. So what the people, you know, the people see it any time in the near future or even the midterm future?
Well, as far as we know, Don Basterian is being kept in good shape. And it's even present in FIFA 20 and FIFA 19 and all the previous FIFA. So it tells you something. I mean, there's no games being held there. And everything's being taken care of, so probably someday.
I was in Kramatorsk earlier this season. They have a beautiful stadium in the city, which is only used by Shakhtar under-19s at the moment, and Shakhtar youth train there, I think, because the owner of the stadium doesn't get on with the owner of Avangard Kramatorsk. It's a beautiful location that they've got back in Donetsk Oblast. And it would be nice to see them. I know, Shiv, you might disagree having them in your hometown of Kharkiv there, but it might be nice to see them.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely in the next 10 years, I don't see it happening. I just think that area is too kind of toxic, isn't the right word, but it's too far gone. And I just think that Kharkiv is the second city of Ukraine in terms of population anyway. So there is no better place to have their team there. Plus, the Luhansk team, they've taken over Zaporizhia city. So it kind of all fits and makes sense the way it is. So I can't see it in the next 10 years. But it's one of those, you don't know. Who knows? Who knows what the future will bring? We didn't know this was going to happen in Belarus like this, what's happened now. So who's to say what the future will bring?
Sure, I'm just reading a report here that came out yesterday where Oleg Stenko, the presidential advisor, said it'll take over $10 billion to restore Donbass to where it was. I know it's kind of political wrangling and we're veering off football a bit, but it shows what work needs to be done before I think Shakhtar would be able to go home. Anyway, onwards we go. Erzsaliga. And we were hoping that there'd be a football game to talk about tonight, but I don't believe it's gone ahead. Am I right, Andrew?
Nope, it's been forfeited.
As is the terrible, case. Terrible. And why is that, should I ask?
Well, MFC Metalurg, who are meant to play Urk today, it was a game in hand as it was because Metalurg, they had a coronavirus outbreak just after lockdown started, so the game couldn't go ahead then. And so this was rescheduled for now. And when push comes to shove, the issue came that Metalurg would rather prioritise their game against Trondheim Moritz at home on Thursday rather than play this game and travel and lose the potential, you know, 10% or whatever athletes can have in that vital game where they need to win, which will put them above Balkane, who are likely to lose against Inhaletz in the final game day of the season, and then put themselves in the playoff, relegation playoff place against one of the Druga Liga sides, which is, I think, is either Veres or
it's Allianz.
Allianz. Yeah, right, exactly. So there we go.
Allianz have been working hard for it as well. I think they're looking in good form. It's a real shame that it's happened. And I believe, am I right, Kramatorsk, have they forfeited their game as well now on Thursday against Rock?
Well, I saw some news that they've already let go of their manager. So that's basically their season, that they don't really, they've parted ways with him. And so I think that's basically Kramatorsk just packing it up. And at the end of the day, in terms of legal, you know, terms, etc., they won't be kicked out. Or
I think we just lost
out or punished. They won't be kicked out or punished for any reason, because it's only their first game forfeited. So, you know, no, from Kramatorsk to Lviv, I think that's a bit of a journey that anyone would want to give a miss, especially in the current climate. So some people will be saying it's bad sportsmanship, which it is, but in, you know, in the context of how the country is and what's going on, you might be able to let them off, but that's to everyone else's sort of detriment.
Yeah, I wonder, it's got me wondering if we'll see some legal wranglings popping up next week, if especially with whoever ends up finishing fifth place in Persia. Druk have kind of automatically gained 6 points there. What do you think's going to happen on Thursday night, guys? Who do we think's going to take the top three spots then? We've got one get very, very big game, and the others, it should be quite easy 3 points. Am I right, Andre?
Well, there are a couple of big games on Thursday, as it's been for a while in Persha Liga, but this last game day will be hot because our business is hectic in terms of their promotion, because before that, they said that we are not promoting for sure, we're just playing, we're not even getting a license to play in Premier League. But now, right before the game with Obolon on Thursday, their last game, they say if we finish in top place, everything can happen. So there's one more game for you. Last game of Inhaletz against Ruch could have been decisive. Inhaletz could just grab the golden medals and promote without the last game, but they drew, and there was not much of sportsmanship, as Andrew said, because it wasn't such a derby as it was promoted to be. So those three clubs who weren't keen to continue the season as it is after the COVID quarantine, as you remember in our first very first episode, we discussed how it should be. Those three teams of Ruch, Volyn and Nai from Western Region, all three of them, they didn't want to finish the season. They're comfortable in top three. And now, somehow, it all pans out for them. Ruch gets 6 points out of nothing. Volyn is probably finishing on top as well. And Inhaletz is secured in top three places so far. So, well, that's Ukrainian football. That's all I can say. And thank God Obolon is not involved in this mess.
Are you disappointed that Obolon are staying in the Persia?
At first, all of us were. But the way it was going on, like all these managers' vacations, coach rotations, you remember that, we discussed it. So, but now, all of the recent activity in Persha Liga, really, it's such a relief to see Obolon just safe in their sixth place and everything to grab in the next season.
Fingers crossed. Max, who do you think will take the top three spots on Thursday? Have you been following the Persia Liga at all?
Oh, me. So, yeah, I follow it. Yeah, just lost connection. What I want to say about agribusiness, as you know, their president has been banned forever for beating the referee after the match with Minai. So maybe this is the way he wants to show something off, okay, now we want to promote, but their stadium is banned, the president is banned. What are they going to do if they qualify to Premier League? I don't know. Some games behind the scenes. And this match between Ingolets and Ruch, 1-1, there were some rumors about, again, kind of agreements that we play a draw, which suits both sides. Minai, I don't know about them much. I know they have money, but what are they going to do? I don't know. Volin, don't know. There are many games behind the scenes in Persha Liga. So those teams that want to qualify, they will. They will somehow decide it behind the scenes. I think three teams are pretty a lot for Persha Liga. Ingolets, maybe. Oh, I don't know what to expect. But actually, I like Persha Liga more than Premier League. There are more interesting teams, good locations, some clubs with supporters, good stadiums. And this league is more interesting for me. So I always want to some uninteresting teams to qualify to Premier League to keep Persha Liga clean and interesting.
Where's your favorite place to go in the Persha Liga then?
Let's see. I've been to Kramatorsk as well. Great location. It's nice to see that the city that suffered a bit because of Russia, war with Russia. It's nice to see the city is doing quite well. They have a professional team, two large stadiums. But as I see, I think Ivano-Frankivsk is my favorite stadium. I've been there 2 years ago and great stadium. The atmosphere is good. People really attend the stadium. They support the team. And as you probably know, this team is kept by city government. So this is not just a short-term business project. And they also have only local players like Bilbao. So definitely Ivano-Frankivsk is the best location. And others are quite interesting as well. So if these guys, Ingolets, Minai, and Agribusiness will qualify to Premier League, I'll be just glad. It will become much more interesting with all these teams to qualify from Druga Liga. It's going to be a nice season next year.
Definitely. I'll be curious if Ingolets do go up, if the chairman will repave the road from Petrovi to Alexandria. I think these days it takes about 2 hours to do the 50 kilometres to the village, but I don't know if Shakhtar and Dinamo will be up for that. Shiv,
yes.
Taking Kharkiv, I mean, you guys, you know, I know you're a Shakhtar fan. Are you disappointed with Met Lister?
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it is, Metalist has been overshadowed by Shakhtar Donetsk. It's going to be difficult to have two big teams in that city. It's not, even though it's the second city of Ukraine, it's not, you know, it's not really a big city. I think, you know, I don't know. I think that the only way Metalist will thrive is if Shakhtar moves away. If Shakhtar moves away, then there will be a sort of vacuum that will need to be filled because the city, I mean, I don't know about Western Ukraine, so I don't know how crazy it is there, but there is a certain amount of passion in Kharkiv for their football. And I've seen it. I've been amongst the ultras and just the general Shakhtar fans. And people want a team in that city. But I think whilst Shakhtar is there, I just can't see Metalist or whichever club comes in place of Metalist being anything of significance. And that's also purely because Shakhtar are that good. You know, they are now, in, you know, if you think about it, they've got into the final stages of the elite in Europe. And when you think about it, most of the teams there are the five big leagues. They're from England, they're from France, from Spain, Italy, Germany. And Shakhtar now have potentially got the chance of getting into the semi-final. So the gap between Shakhtar and the rest is huge. And I can only see it getting bigger as well. So
yeah. Can't forget Switzerland there, though. Otherwise, Andre will rip our heads off.
And Denmark with Copenhagen.
Yeah. But yeah, that's fantastic, Shiv. Hopefully, we'll see Kharkiv football develop a bit more in the future. Max, it's great to have you here today. I first became aware of you, shall we say, through a book that you've just brought out onto the market with a friend of mine in Kiev, Konstantin. Could you tell us a little bit about the book that you guys have been researching over the last few years?
Yeah, sure. So we are the ground hopping team of five members. Five major members, and one of us started to collect all the data regarding matches and stadiums that were used for these matches since the first competition in 1992. So he collected all these data from Football Federation website, and these that section is no longer available there, so we probably have quite a unique data now. Not sure they will recover it. Anyway, we managed to get it all. And he sorted it all according to stadiums. The stadium, how many matches of each competition held there. And he offered this idea to us, to our ground hopping team. And we all find it at, like before, we were looking for some criteria to collect, to publish something, to collect the major stadiums of Ukraine in some way. But we didn't know how to find this criteria. And so this idea, this data about professional matches held from 1992 was perfect. It suited our ideas, our wills. So we started to work on this data. The data was already collected, but we had to check it all, find pictures of the stadiums. That was quite tough, especially regarding Crimea and Donbas occupied cities. Anyway, with the help of many people, and we also traveled ourselves to many stadiums, we gathered all this data in the book. And the main purpose of this book, our goal, was to not only make this handbook of Ukrainian stadiums, but also to attract people to local stadiums, to local football, because many people, even those who follow football and they support big teams like Dynamo or Shakhtar living in other cities, they don't care about their local football, and they don't know what's the story behind their local stadium. They just know some amateurs play there and they don't care much. So we wanted to attract attention to these stadiums, that they have history. They had professional clubs some years ago, and now these teams are amateur, which is not that bad. So, we wanted to attract this attention, and we wanted to check if people are really interested in local football, local stadiums. And hopefully, we only published 100 books. And our expectations were fulfilled. All the books are sold out quite fast. good feedback from people. And we see that people really care about football history, local football. And now, hopefully, we found some sponsors that are willing to print our book again in color. So currently, we work on some mistakes we had, correcting some data, also with the help from our customers, our readers, and updating some pictures, because the quality should be quite high for the color print. And in the nearest future, our book will be reissued with and to be sold in the big markets, not just in Facebook and Instagram like we did with our 100 books.
So Andrew, you
soon
can...
you're gonna find it in color.
Fantastic. Andrew, I saw your face lit up then when you saw they were reprinting it. I think you're quite excited by that book, am I right?
Yeah, I missed it the first time. I saw it on Facebook, but I'll be definitely picking that up once that's reissued. That's for sure.
So, Max, you've travelled a lot in Ukraine then. What regions have been your favourite ones to travel around?
Well, I must say that I have been to Kryvyi Rih city, the one in Dnipro region. This is just like a separate country of football. You know, they have so many clubs and so many stadiums. Kryvyi Rih is one of top locations in Ukraine to visit. You can always find 3 or 4 matches in on a weekend, and all on the interesting, good stadiums with history. Okay, so Kryvyi Rih is one of the best locations. I must say that there are many, many interesting stadiums all around Ukraine. So I live in Sumy region, which is quite interesting regarding stadiums and locations, but I don't like people here. They are quite aggressive. As you told me about Glukhiv, I'm not surprised. People are very aggressive in Sumy region, and they just talk some bad stuff about their players, referees. They blame everything, and they don't relax, and they don't. They are not happy on the stadium. They don't enjoy it. They just want to share their negative emotions. So Sumy region is interesting, but I don't like people here. I'm originally not from here. I'm from Kyiv, but I just live here. Okay, so I must say that Kyiv itself is interesting on professional level because of Olympic Stadium, Dynamo Stadium, Oberland, 3 big stadiums already. But the region itself is quite boring. Not many arenas, all concentrated in Kyiv. Western Ukraine, Lviv region is quite densely covered with interesting stadiums, with supporters, good atmosphere. Unfortunately, I haven't been there quite enough. This is quite far, but this is my plan for future. And Donbas, those cities that's like remain under Ukrainian control now, they are all quite interesting, and they held amateur leagues now. A lot of places to visit there, not only Kramatorsk in professional Persha Liga, but all these cities, Slovyansk, Druzhkivka, Severodonetsk, all these cities are quite interesting. They have big old stadiums, industrial cities are used to have these big old stadiums. So Donbas and Kryvyi Rih are rich with big stadiums, old school style, with wooden benches and big stands. Little of supporters, but still, the stadiums itself are quite good.
So you've just reminded me there. I went to Motosich's stadium in Zaporizhia city, Independence Weekend last year, and that felt like a proper old school stadium with the the wooden benches going all the way around. And I mean, they've been an amateur team for many years, but it was a real fantastic experience. Felt like I was stepping back in time there. Andrew, am I right? You've travelled a bit in Ukraine. I know your plan was to before COVID kicked in this time of the year. Where do you enjoy going for football?
Well, for me, the majority of my games that I've seen in Ukraine have been national team ones. I've travelled all across to see those. But I'm hoping, as was the plan, I was hoping to do a bit more of the club stuff this summer, but that's been postponed till next year. But keep your eyes posted on that. Plenty more to come. But yeah, I mean, last year I went to Dnipro for just a couple of days to see Ukraine play Nigeria there for the first time in over 10 years. And you can just see how much of a sort of a footballing city it is. It was, almost fully packed, the stadium, great ultra support as well from the club. And it's just a shame that obviously that's sort of going to waste now. Hopefully something in the future comes from that positive. But and similarly in Lviv, you've got Karpaty who are on the wayside. You don't exactly know what's going on there. Hopefully this regeneration project in Druhalicha will bear some good fruit, and it might bring out the people back to the stadium now that the club will be run by, hopefully a coherent person. But yeah, I mean, for me, my favorite stadium that I've probably been to in Ukraine, gonna have to go for Alana international night. You just can't beat the atmosphere.
Sorry, which one was that? You got cut off a little bit.
Oh right, yeah, no, that's Arena Lviv.
Okay. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful place. It's just sadly too expensive for any of the Premier League teams to play in.
And awful infrastructure to match.
Andre, where have you been with Obolon? Where do you like going?
Well, I've been to all of the big stadiums mentioned in Kharkiv, in Lviv, in Kiev, apart from Obolon Arena. I really enjoyed Ternopil Stadium as a hidden gem for me because it's a very good stadium, and it's been... it's not been mentioned by most people because although Niva Ternopil has come back to the Persha Liga, if I'm not mistaken, for the next season. So they're going to be playing in Persha Liga with Obolon, and I'm hoping to return there for once.
Yeah, it really is a beautiful little city as well, with fantastic lake there. I mean, that's one of the things for me with football. It's all about... It's not only about going for the game. You can go to these regions. I was talking to one of your friends, Andrea Oblon, Oleg, from there. And we were talking about Balkany Zorya that could hopefully, from my perspective, won't end up in the playoffs this week. But he talks of, it's fantastic to go down to Balkany and Sarata there and try the local wines and... In summertime, and just go, you're in that real quiet corner of Odessa underneath Moldova there, and it's a beautiful part of the world to go and visit. We get to do this as football fans. You get to travel all around Ukraine and visit these fantastic places, which is what I was so happy to experience last year when I went to the different regions and got to see so many different things. One of my favourite places, I was really happy with some of my friends went there this summer, was Novokukhovka in Kherson. Max, have you ever been down to Kherson Oblast for football?
Yeah, I've been there, and Novokukhovka is a decent location. It's such a beautiful city on the banks of Dnipro River. And Kherson, the region is... not only about Novokukhovka, Kherson has a great stadium there. They also have Kakhovka, not Novokukhovka, another Kakhovka. They have Berislav, that Crimean Tavria plays there. And a few years before, they had a professional club, Mir, in Hornostaivka, quite a remote location in a tiny village. I've been there once, and it's a village where you cannot get from after the match. You must ask players or referees. So I left the city in a car with referees. That was the only option to survive the match. So unfortunately, they don't play anymore there. Maybe they play in amateur, but I'm not sure. So Kherson is pretty good region. And we have one of our groundhoppers lives in Mykolaiv, and he travels a lot around there, many good locations, completely unknown by people because there is only one professional club there. But on amateur level, there are many, many interesting locations, like everywhere in Ukraine. But what I love here in Ukraine, in ground hopping, that it's very diverse. You can find tiny rural stadiums with no stands, just some wooden benches, but great atmosphere. Village football is just amazing, with all these referees wearing random shorts, drinking beer or smoking. Just people just love football. They play terribly, but they love it. They play with passion. And you can find big stadiums in industrial cities, sometimes a bit abandoned, in bad condition, but it also adds some character to them. Adds some features you can hardly find in other countries. So it's very diverse in Ukraine. Big stadiums, small stadiums, good atmosphere, no atmosphere. You can find anything in Ukraine if you travel football. This is what I love comparing to other countries, because I've been to many other countries, especially in Asia. And yeah, it's interesting to see several matches in one country, but then it becomes quite boring because it's very alike. Like in Korea, there are just two or three major stadium types. And I've been to maybe about 15 stadiums in Korea, but they are all almost the same. I would say just large stadium, Olympic stadium, basic 30,000 seater stadiums, and some smaller arenas. And that's it, that's pretty similar. But Ukraine is really diverse, and this is what I love about football in my country.
Chief, have we tempted you out of Kharkiv now, further west, to come and watch some football on your next trip?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I've visited a few more places in Ukraine, but not for football. So I've only been to the Metalist Stadium. I've seen the Olympic Stadium from outside. But yeah, I mean, I think as Max was saying, it just seems like there's a lot more. You know, it's like the English pubs, isn't it? You know, you've got that sort of that thing that, you know, it's got that bit of flavor. And I can understand what he's saying in like certain places like Korea, South Korea and all that. It's like sort of homogenized sort of stadiums and things like that. So there must be a lot of like local authenticity. Maybe that's the correct way of saying it in terms of the stadiums. And I can just imagine what he's saying. Yeah. So
definitely. Right then, guys, that's a wrap for tonight. We're going to be back in 2 weeks' time with a national team special just before the start of the Nations League. But for that, we've got the Premier League restarting in how many days' time, Mr. Andrew? You're on mute. Your microphone's off, mate.
I believe it's 12. So Saturday in a week's time.
And we aim to have a preview for the league out just beforehand. So keep an eye out on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. We'll let you know what's happening there. Max, if people want to get in touch with you about the book, can they get you on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook? What's your handles?
We have Instagram and Facebook. How can I share the link?
If you can just tell it, and then we'll add it into the bio afterwards.
Okay. 1 second. I should double check our Instagram address. 1 minute. Okay. So it's Groundhopping Ukraine in Instagram.
Fantastic.
And in Facebook, you can find us with our website, probably. Actually, we have a website, groundhopping.in.ua.
All right, fantastic. Shiv, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
I've got a football website called ironcurtainfootball.com. And I've also got a boxing boot camp that happens in Kharkiv in eastern Ukraine, and that's ironcurtainboxing.com. So yeah, those are the best websites to get in touch with me.
And Andre, for anyone listening for the first time, where can they catch up with you?
If you want to find out more about Obolon and to just follow the club, you can follow Instagram page called Obolon Casual. If you want to get in touch with me, just type in Ray Vic in Instagram anytime.
Andrew, over to you.
Yeah, at Zoria Londonsk, London, on Instagram and Twitter.
And I'm Adam at Ukrafoot24. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, pretty much everywhere else as well. And we look forward to talking to you all in 2 weeks' time. It's been a pleasure with everyone again. Have a good 2 weeks, everybody, and enjoy your football. Bye.